I was watching Tom's this morning. I'd done the college run this morning. I dropped my partner's daughter at the college, so I put Tom's interview on. I was watching it. It's mostly Tom doing the talking, isn't it?
Hang on, yeah.
When I was watching your clips, and obviously, who's commentating? It's Tom.
Yeah.
So he's done. He was one of the talking heads doing the soundboards on your documentary as well, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
Talking about what you've done. Like, he's a massive advocate of.
Because he's got that voice as well from the radio and all that the media. He was the right person to use. So anything like that, I would say, Tom, can you help me out with this? And Tom's been on my side to ringside and done a lot of commentaries and stuff.
Notes that on the commentary. Yeah.
So I didn't realise when we spoke to him, he was saying that he's been. So I was like, oh yeah, I'm having a what colour boxing match. And he's like, yeah, I had one and I've been boxing my entire life. I never knew that.
Yeah.
And now he's involved with the bare knuckle boxing, isn't he?
He is, yeah. He fought Tracy, didn't he?
I don't know.
Tracy, yeah.
Is that who he fought?
Yeah. And he's decent boxing, or? Yeah. But the training he wanted to do, he lost a lot of weight and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's Mr. Burnley when he's on.
He is, yeah.
But he's saying his voice, it's the most distinguishable voice, isn't it? Like your nickname. Like Cash the Flash. Like Tom Ross's voice.
Yeah,
that's the same kind of thing, instantly recognisable.
Yeah. So anyway, a lot of people know my name, but they don't know the face.
Yeah. Where did the name come from?
The name is...
Who gave you the name?
My trainer, Howard. Obviously, because I was quick at picking things up, quick at fighting, knocking people out and stuff. So from my first fight, I had my name down my trousers. How confident was I? So if you have a name like that down your trousers, you lose, you're getting off toes. Down in the flash.
He does something similar to this. He had his name under his boots.
Oh, under the boots.
That would have been a good idea, actually. I did end up on my arse three times, so
probably would have been a bad idea. Did you get that down, did you?
Yeah. The goal was, to be fair, one of my questions in here is about your height and how much that was in combat. So I was fighting, he was nearly a foot taller than me. I could not get inside his reach at all.
Yeah.
So I'm overextending then, walking onto him.
I'm not a big fan of white collar boxing.
No.
No, because, you know, if you get a good promoter who looks after the fighters, I don't mind. But I've had people, like, pull out and they go, they sold 100 tickets. They just put them in the wrong person. And, you know, like, all the medical and you can have everything there. So when we've done promotion, make sure that's first. If something happens, take it to the cleaners. Put you all around the press. That's the dangers of it.
But
if you got a good promoter who looks after it and make sure you're pretty, like, it's having a guy bigger than you, may not be the same weight.
We were not far off, and then I think he'd.
And sometimes, you know, experienced fighters come in and they don't declare it. And these guys are hammering. That's the only problem because it's unlicensed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, there was a bit of that creeping in towards the end. All of a sudden, people were starting to talk about the experience they had, and there were some that are genuinely not boxing like myself and a couple of others.
That's how it should be. People have never done anything. Yeah. They want to have a go for 8 weeks. Bloody not enough time. And they've gone in the ring and they're just having a... It's terrible to watch.
That's what John Pegg said to us. We had John Pegg on there. You know,
yeah, I know John Pegg.
So he said that. He said, there's just blokes who just want to batter people. So that you got him coming in. He's had 20 fights. He's not declared. He's coming in and beating up an accountant. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
And once you get out of that,
yeah,
it's like kickboxing, same. It's just like there's no real card of how many fights about. So he might have a guy who's had 20 fights. There's no record of it. So he goes in with a guy and he's had 2 fights.
So funny story about that, actually. So when we were younger, we kickboxing. Come to time, one of those things, we tried different things, jiu-jitsu, tried kickboxing. And we got entered into a tournament, didn't we? We haven't been there, what was it, a couple of weeks? And they...
Who was the coach for you?
So it's I think his name is Stephen Honer.
Honer. I've heard the name.
It's my mate, and he was his old man. I don't know his name's Stephen, but I didn't know if his old man's not, but he was definitely Honer.
He was probably our dad, like, yeah, put him in.
Yeah.
But we entered the competition then.
Are you brothers?
Yeah.
Wouldn't let us fight each other.
No,
we entered the competition. I was only a dot. Bigger now. He was older, so
he hasn't grown much now, has he?
Yeah. It's your boy now. Since I've gone past 40, I'm shrinking.
He's drinking up milk.
So Heath had to fight someone that I think had a lot more experience, was a lot bigger. He absolutely beat the brakes off him.
Yeah.
And they put me in with the girl.
Right.
And I didn't want to fight the girl, so I'm trying to fight a girl.
Yeah.
And I hit her, and I made a bleed.
Yeah.
And I absolutely traumatised me, and she's got blonde hair and she's covered in blood there. So they wanted to carry on. I was like, no, I wouldn't fire.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
So she battered it.
Yeah.
I know, yeah. Don't have us. Don't have us on for us.
Major, it's mainland girls that really come on. You know, yeah. The boxing, the sellout arenas and stuff like that. But that was early years where we were doing Thai boxing. I trained Master Tully from Manchester. He used to put the girls on the Annabella. And the evening, my Leon Hickman used to put big reports. Oh, because it's brutal, barbaric sport. They bring the women. It was freakish. But look how it's developed since then. It's really come on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is it Barry? No, that's her name. Who John was saying about Lucy Barry? Is it?
No, he's got a couple.
There's a few that are absent. Like, and you've seen them, and they're animals now. Yeah, like, yeah. They're training with blokes, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, let's okay. So if we take it back to the beginning, then. So what was the let me just read out a few facts first.
Were we kind of recording?
We're just recording anyway, just, yeah.
Oh, are we?
Yeah.
Okay, sure.
So
that's how casual it is, yeah.
Yeah. Even better.
Yeah.
For the UK's most prolific kickboxer.
That's me.
Four-time world champion. World champion in kickboxing at the age of 21. Became world amateur kickboxing champion at the age of 20.
Yeah.
So where did it begin? Where did the love of combat sports begin?
Being a youngster, obviously, big family. Got five boys, one girl in our family. My mother died very young, unfortunately, and I was only a youngster, 9 years old. And my father, you know, I look back at it now, he's a real warrior because he was at work, the foundry, supporting us, never remarried or anything like that. Just brought us up. So obviously passed away. What happened, he went over to India and he died in his sleep. And he always said to me, he's going to die in his sleep. It went like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that was a big motivator for my own career. You know, he's a big inspiration and stuff like that. So, so we used to watch Muhammad Ali, you know, young kids watching him on the screen because everyone, you know, tuning in, mainstream boxing on ITV and all that kind of stuff, BBC and Muhammad Ali parts. So the youngsters used to watch it, be tuned in on it. So boxing became my love. I loved boxing parts. Any boxing part, I'd be glued to the screen as a youngster. And then obviously, walking through Hansa's Park as a young teenager, 14 years old, seeing a demonstration of hands and feet. I'd never seen that before. It was Howard Brown and Godfrey Butler, who were obviously my mentors and my coaches. And a couple of days later, they put a big poster up, starting new classes, Hansa's Park. I was first one in, never looked back, and that was it. Since 1980, I've been continuing, which is like 45 years, 46 years now.
Why? And that's all about you, literally a chance meeting. Because there was a presentation from the park when you walked.
It was a demonstration. Someone's in the park. So when we go out doing demos and all, I say, you know what? It's worth having a go because you never know. It could change your life because it worked for me.
Was you a lively lad? Was you a bit street and a bit?
I could fight in that, but yeah. I wasn't lively. I was quite shy and reserved. I was a bit of a loner really. When I wrote my biography, and I said, you know, that's what made me a world champion because I didn't mix in crowds and friends. I think it's a single man sport, and I kept myself to myself.
Yeah, because I'd seen that in your documentary as well. You spoke about in the early years training. You trained on your own because there was no one else to spar.
That's right, yeah, because obviously it was that kind of new sport, kickboxing, and, you know, having people to hold the pads and do training, sparring partners. I think that's why, you know, my brain's pretty good at the moment because I avoided all the sparring because they say a lot of the damage is in the sparring.
Yeah.
A lot of the headshots you take. And fights in is bad, but sparring does take it out of you. So maybe that was a blessing.
Okay, yeah. Because you do see a lot now, and they're tightly up on their health and safety over the years. But back in the 80s and stuff, it was brutal. Like, the fights were all, but like you say, you see some of the sparring, and the sparring is just as brutal as them and just as bad as the fights.
It is, yeah. But you know, back in 1980, it was kickboxing was a new sport. You know, you'd say to people, "I'm doing kickboxing." It was kind of, what's kickboxing? You say, "Oh, it's in a boxing ring, and we put the gloves on and hands and feet." We're just 35 years too early for what's going on today. You know, if we was going today, we'd be multimillionaires, you know, with the Conor McGregor, we'd be doing the UFC.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was new. And luckily, in 1980, I started training. I picked up things really quick. I got my black belt in 1984. It took me 4 years, which is quite quick, really. Mm-hmm. It can take people 10 years and 12 years. But got in 4 years, youngster. Now, I always wanted to go in the ring. I wanted to be like Howard. Howard was a world champion. He was the first world champion in the UK, Howard. So that's a history itself.
It's not bad a degree, is it?
No. Mm. So anyway, he took me under his wing. You know, I started training with him in the daytime. I left school, you know, 16, and I started living in the gym, just training with him in the daytime, in the evening, going out to the classes. and just constantly train all the time, go on, constantly add my bag. And my brother said, where are you going now? You've always got that bag. Somewhere in training, because it's all about dedication. And I had it from early years. I wanted to have my fight. So you get to be 18. So I said, I'm nearly 18. Let's just say I'm 18, 17 years old. So went to Birmingham Central Hall, which is the Q Club. Went down there, big crowd in Birmingham. Didn't really want any family to watch me. Said, don't watch me till I fight for the world title. I said, I will be fighting for the world title one day. So when I fight for that, come down. So I went down, and within 30 seconds, I beat this guy from London. I'd stopped him. And then the second fight was an international fight. It was a...
Your second fight?
Second fight international, because someone had pulled out of the team. They said, look, it was Howard's brother. He couldn't fight. So should we put cash in? I said, this is real big, deep end. I've just had 30 seconds. I'm going to put a 5-round international. So I went there. I weighed in 147, which is like a welterweight. Should have been 11 stone 2. So I'm underweight. I'm running on the Wednesday. I'm running 10 miles, which I should not even be doing on the Wednesday. I'm fighting Saturday because I didn't really know how to train. So I went in on the Saturday and I'm absolutely worn out, drained. Went the full distance and won on points. That was the second fight. And then the third fight, they sent me to Europe, to Austria. This is in at the deep end. So they said the European Championships, there's nobody, we haven't got anyone at 70 kilo, which is 11 stone. Being 6'3", 11 stone. I said, I'll go. So, but I need to fund myself. And I had 100 and something pound, 170 pound, 100. So I didn't have the money. So I went home to my dad. I said, Dad, they've offered me to go to Austria to fight. I said, but I need 150, 160 pound. My dad went, all right, here's the money. Like, 2 weeks' wages, that is, back in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. He said, here you go. I said, I'll pay you back one day. Went to Austria. One of the lads weighed in over the weight. He came in at 71. I came in bang on 10 stone 12. But they said, oh, Cash, what we'll do, we'll put you in the 12 stone category, which is unfair. Really, the guy overweight should have gone into that category. So anyway, I said, yeah, fine, I'll go in. Because we fight anyone. We would like throw us in with the Lions. Yeah. So anyway, I went in there. And the first fight, I can't remember, I think from Switzerland. Went the distance, beat him. The second fight, I remember looking up at this guy for bloody hell. This guy, massive, big boulders. But that don't scare me. Because the bigger they are, harder. Mm-hmm. But anyway, first round, got the better of him. Second round, I don't remember anything else. Really? On the floor, on the camp. I watched the video. 35 plus years later, I've got the video off. The guy who fought me, he said, I've got the video. And they actually carry me out on a stretcher from the ring, sent to an ambulance, or the ambulance come in, and they carry me out, and I'm completely unconscious in the ambulance all the way there. Still don't know what's going on. Now, when I look back at it now, I think, thank God I came around. It's people that are going to come and never come around. So when I look back at it, someone's watching down on me. Anyway, that was a week in hospital in Austria. The only good thing is I learned little bits of German.
I was going to say, what was that? Or did you come around and no one speaks English and you wondered where you were?
Is it like an old, yeah.
Luckily, it's bits of English. But I had observation that in the brain scans, thankfully, they let me go back. And then I had to come back on an 18-hour train journey, a ferry. Bear in mind, I'd never been abroad before. Flew on the plane, come back, ferry, traffic, and play the other side. This is tough, isn't it? So that was my first experience of going away anywhere abroad. So.
And how old are you at this point?
18 years old.
And is this the fight? Obviously, I've watched your documentary. Is this one where you had to get back on your own? Everyone had come back and
that's right.
You're on my back.
That's right, yeah. And then the biggest fear was telling my dad that I've lost. And then I told my dad, he said, sometimes you need a good beating to make a man of you. It's like an Asian saying. I said, he said, just train harder. So that's what it done. He either makes you or breaks you. You know, you can lose it and not do it as a youngster. Yeah. Think this ain't for me. But I went the opposite way. And after that, win, went on a streak, then built the confidence up again. So
was it that you didn't want to get that feeling of going and telling your dad again, or was it the feeling of you didn't want to get knocked out, or was it what, or was it just that you were like
bit of everything, probably, because my trainer when I came back said, you have mismanaged, he said, you should never have been in that category, he said, because sort of, but it's one of them things you can't,
that could have broke you, couldn't it, just be, you could have been that disillusioned at that point.
It could very, as a trainer myself, as a coach myself, I would never get any of my fighters doing that. So no, that's way too heavy. You need to be this way. Because even 4, 5, 6 pounds can be a big difference. But a stone is way too much.
Got it.
So anyway, the journey continued. Then we started traveling around all the UK, like, you know, Leicester, Nottingham, Ipswich, to London. I loved the traveling. It was great.
Have you paid for this at the time? How was it being funded?
This was all someone did a promotion on, they've got a big show on the schedule. Have you got any fighters? It's the same as what they're doing now. Have you got any fighters? And Howard had me and he had Huey Ford. I don't know if you know Huey Ford. Huey Ford, he went on to professional boxing in the end and became a European champion and Commonwealth champion. So me and him used to travel everywhere. And then he went to the boxing. I kind of went, well, I'm going to stick with the kickboxing. And he done pretty well because boxing always had more money. It was always had more coverage, had more media coverage. I was coming on all the channels like Here and Now, you know, the ethnic minority, the network is, because I was thinking, there's an Asian guy fighting here. This is really rare. So I was the first Asian in the UK to be world champion in contact sports. So
before, amazing.
Yeah. So that was never done. They've done a documentary in Birmingham, more canals than Venice, 100 facts about Birmingham, the UB40, Apache India. And I came, I'll get it right. Four-time world champion. I was the first Asian in the UK to be world champion in a contact sport. Because a lot of people don't know, even to this day. So we just, people say, you should rant about that. Well, I'm not that kind of person to do that.
This coming on here.
There you go, yes.
We're putting out to a newer craze. We're just in socials and stuff at the moment and stuff. We're getting just on the TikTok and where our order on. But it's bringing a new angle of audience to people who are in business or people that have done a lot in Birmingham. So it's like, brilliant, do you know what I mean? That people, like you say, would never even know.
The best thing that ever happened for us, the internet. Yeah. Because we can go back to the 80s if we can get footage. Obviously, yeah. Back in the day, it was like big camcorders carrying it around.
Right, any footage.
And I used to fight at the end, so always the film used to run out, so I had to get little clips of it. But it shows that you can show, you know, what you've done back in the 80s, back in the 90s. And one of the fights I had, I was defending my world title. Tom Ross was there as I was commentating it with Cynthia Rothrock. And it was a world title defense guy called Mike Corbacol from America. You know, he's a big hitter.
I watched that earlier.
Yeah, and he came over. And we didn't really get on. Normally, we get on with the fighters. We kind of hated each other from the off. And got in the ring. I'd done the splits. I don't know if you've seen that bit. When I'd done the splits, I did pull a muscle right in my ass. I thought, and I got up. And went to the middle of the ring. We looked each other in the eyes. And the first round knocked me down. Did you see that bit?
Yeah.
It knocked me down. But I don't know if I subconsciously was thinking about the muscle. But second round, third round, then I knocked him out. Then the ref came in and stopped it.
Because you said that previously, didn't you, as well? You used to see the deck early because you were a slow starter.
I was.
So you needed a good punch in the end or a good kick to the canvas to give you a little bit of a wake up.
Maybe. But I had another fight with a guy from Thailand. You know, back in the early 90s, I had a trainer from also Masatadi. He's in Manchester. He was one of the first Thais who came to the UK in about 75. Him and Master Skin. And they're the ones who really got Thai boxing going. So those don't know the history of Thai boxing. It was Masatadi and Master Skin. So they're the ones who got it going. And he loved the warrior mentality. And, you know, he watched a lot of my fights and me training. Oh, he's excited because I had to drop my hands and move around, take loads of shots. And then, because he loved that, he said, look, we started travelling to Manchester once a week. Howard used to take me with him. And we learned the art of Thai boxing, like kicking to the legs, grabbing knee, elbow. And I loved it. It was just more violent, but at the same time, that discipline. Yeah. So in the end, he said, look, we're bringing a team over from Thailand. Do you want to fight Superman? I said, whoa, fight Superman. I'm going to beat Batman to this. So I fought a guy called Superman, Old Sudsapa. And I tell you what, he was 6'2" and he was 10 stone 12. Very rare you get anyone from Thailand who's over 5'3". You know, he came in, and that's why they called him Superman. And when you lose in the camp from Thailand, that's why you're at the gym. You got to find another gym.
Really?
Yeah. So that fight, 5 3-minute rounds, he went live to Thailand. So this was about 4:30 in the afternoon, down in London, Pickett's Lock. And they said, Cash, you're fighting first. That was the team ring. So I went in there. And he knocked me down in the first round. It was 6 ounce gloves. I'd never been hit so hard. He was an Asian Games gold medalist boxing champion. He could punch. He was a southpaw as well. For those who don't know what southpaw is, he had his rifle forward and he could bang with his left hand. And I'd never been hit so hard. It felt like a bare knuckle. I got back up. I went back to the corner. He knocked me down again the second, hit me with a body punch and then another headshot. And when I went back to the third, I looked at him and said, I ain't going down again. It's just so strange how your mind works. I never went down again. And I came back, third round I won, fourth round I won, fifth round I won. Because I'd been knocked down, there's no way I was going to make the decision. So the winner is Superman El Sadsapa. So, but a great experience. And I wasn't even world champion, I was European champion then. So with that's another learning part, which I looked at. I thought, you know what? There's guys out there, have you fought this guy? Fight the guys from Thailand, if you're really doing Thai boxing. Back in them, it was hard.
Because I'd seen you said that I hadn't asked you to go over then, to go over to Thailand.
Yeah, they offered for me to go over, but it wasn't like for 2 weeks, three. It was go over to fight in the big stand for 6 months and go out training one of the camps. But because I'm a Brummie and I loved hometown Birmingham, I didn't really want to take that big step up. So I never stayed. I also had another chance to go over to Hawaii back in the 90s. I went out coaching. Do you know the guy from Kickboxer, the big guy? There's Van Damme and Dennis Alexio.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis Alexio is a real world champion. So one of our guys, Lawrence, I took Lawrence out there as his coach and do his corner. And he beat Lawrence. He's a really good, tough fighter. You know, he stopped Lawrence in three rounds. But when I was out there training, doing my boxing, they wanted to sign me up as a professional boxer because I was pretty decent with the hands.
Right.
But kind of went, you know what? Hawaii, will place that. I wish I took it now. When I look back at it, I thought, you know what? I should have given it a go. But again, I came back to lovely Birmingham.
Mm. Did you find that along the way? Was there many times that you were trying to be pulled into boxing? And obviously the money and the things that come with that.
Yeah, yeah. The money earlier, it's always like a carrot that they were dangling that you've been.
Yeah, it was very tempting, but I didn't take boxing off because I didn't get my kicks.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I had a chance in the early 90s. I think Howard and a few of those, my coach, they were doing a professional boxing. And Howard was going to fight Pat Cardell, who was going to be a big, big fight as well. But that was going to be boxing versus kickboxing. But them kind of things is what lifts the sport. That's what they're all doing now.
Well, you look at it now, like the Misfits boxing and the mixed things that they're doing, kind of a little bit of a circus now, isn't there? But it gets the younger generation involved, doesn't it?
And of course it does, yeah. I was lucky in my way because what I was doing, I was training and teaching to support myself. You know, how do you make a living? When I look back at it now, thinking, well, you know, we weren't really advised about later years, what's going to happen, you know, when you come to pension and all that, because we do advise correctly. So I'm kind of thinking, actually, what am I going to do now? But I'm still working on projects. Fingers crossed, these projects I'm working on are going to be huge. That's why I always say, I think positively, I never think negatively. I always think of the positives. And that's what I try and do with students, you know, people I'm coaching. We've changed a lot of lives over the years. You know, I've been at ITV, Pride of Britain. You know, the BBC Hall of Fame, because we work with community, you know, keep disadvantaged kids, deprived kids, because I come from that kind of background where we didn't have anything. So we try and give back. You know, a lot of people never come back to that area. So why are you still in Handsworth and doing this thing? Because we were like these kids. They didn't have anything. We got to give them a chance. And it's not just about becoming a champion. It's about just training, exercise, feeling healthy.
Yeah.
Because in later years, you get your benefits.
We've touched upon it in previous as well. Disciplines and mental health and well-being is part of that journey, isn't it, as well, that you probably rely heavily on to push to particularly kids these days that we've touched upon.
Oh, definitely.
Birmingham and stuff.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Knife crime and people getting them off the streets and stuff like that. There's a whole thing around it, isn't there? What's your kind of philosophy on
it's
that?
It's not just one thing. Yeah, it's loads. What it is at the moment in the world, the discipline be taken away. You got a lot of people fed up, like school teachers, you know, parents. Oh, can't discipline the kids. Oh, when they fall up this, I think, hang on a minute. I think parenting plays a big part in kids' upbringing. It's very important. I've got three of my own kids as well, so I know how that works. But they need that kind of discipline. And next to the armed forces, I think martial arts is probably the best thing to do. You get a lot of young kids starting at 5, 6. And I don't think it's a bad thing, because it starts them off and it can carry through them through their life, mm-hmm. like it's done with me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I kind of help kids out. And they're growing company. The amount of kids that come in, they're really low in esteem, and you can lift them, you know, and over the months, they're really impressed. And the parents complain, yeah, he's been a lot better at school. He's got a lot more friends. He's mixing in, because that just happened naturally.
Without that environment.
We don't try doing it. It just naturally happens.
Yeah. So we were talking, weren't we, about during COVID, the work that you did in the community. You were running free classes for the kids, weren't you?
Yeah.
Which you'd mentioned was recognised in 10 Downing Street.
That's right,
Boris,
yeah.
Johnson at the start.
That's right, yeah. So what happened, when COVID came along and lockdown started, we thought to ourselves, when they lifted lockdown, obviously all the leisure centres and the gyms were all closed. That industry really suffered. You know, my partner had the beauty industry, so her industry collapsed. My industry collapsed. I thought, what we'll do, we're going to the local park and start up free sessions for anyone. Not just we had a group in our gym, so no, we're bored at home, we want to do something. So I thought, well, why don't we just start class? Anyone come, men, women, and children, And amazing how many people turned up because no one had nothing to do. And exercise, it wasn't just about kickboxing, it's just keeping fit and keep it moving. And then we're doing it week in, week out, week in, week out.
Being around people as well, isn't it?
Of course, yeah.
Long time of not seeing people.
Interaction. So anyway, I got this then. This is from 10 Downing Street, personally delivered to my house from not 10 Downing Street.
Yes.
Dear Castor Flash, I'm delighted to hear the world-beating kickboxing power of the Castor Flash continue to inspire new generation of young people. Not only a champion in the ring, you are a champion outside, bringing people together in Hansa's Park to build fitness and confidence through your free martial arts sessions, particularly during the pandemic. And then they also give me a pointer light somewhere, which you break into pieces. Yeah, a pointer light award, which is a very referring.
Fast.
Which I was taken to a Downing Street, a Queen's Jubilee party, obviously, as a baton bearer. There was 2,022 people can carry the baton.
So these are the Commonwealth Games.
The Commonwealth Games, 2022. They picked two people and they picked me. So they said, yeah, I'm going to come to Downing Street and, you know, do a tour of with the paddock. I said, yeah, I'd love to do that. So I went down and what a great day. And I was supposed to have a picture with Boris Johnson on the step. Lucky for him. It was the day of the no confidence vote. Wow. You know, the day. Yeah, you know, yeah. So I met Nadine Doris instead, and she's done, so like, Cash is doing great things, you know, in the community, doing night program workshops. He's doing pre-sessions in the park. So it was great that they knew about the stuff that we're working on, so, and they presented me the Pointer Light Award. So.
And no small thing, can we just come back to a shot of the Hall of Fame award there as well? Just mentioned it briefly, but I think it needs a little bit more
and
a little bit more spotlight.
It needs a good clean as well, yeah. So BBC, that went up with Sir Stanley Matthews, Hugh Porter, Anne Jones, a lot of recognised people in sport, Dennis Amis, and a few others as well. So to get recognised for something like that, BBC, obviously they've seen all the work we're doing in the community, winning four world titles, going around the world, constantly still doing it, still, and they're still seeing, Cash is still going, he's still doing, and still to this day, I'm still doing what I love, which is coaching, you know, students. I do one-to-one sessions, I do community sessions, and we keep the price really, really low because we just cover our costs, you know, kids pay £5. People are charging 10, 60, 70 pound a month. It's not affordable in these areas. It's hard for families. Sometimes they've got three or four kids. I say, you know what, just give me a tenner because I know how hard it is for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we try and do and help them. Not that I'm a millionaire myself, but just trying to give back.
You know what, just going back for a moment. So kickboxer, I'd seen on your other information, so that's a film you go back to. Obviously, we love kickboxer. Jean-Claude Van Damme in the 80s and 90s was the showman, wasn't he, for kind of martial arts in Hollywood. How accurate is the film, just for me to know?
For training that we're doing, it's quite realistic. Obviously, Claude Van Damme ain't really a world champion, because I remember back in the early 90s, I was a world champion, and that's how I'm world champion. I said, you're not world champion. Van Damme's world champion. I said, this is kind of like a clue they've watched too many movies. But for the industry, for that film, making at that time, was great for kickboxing. Because kickboxing clubs open all around the UK. And it made it massive. And I got invited to one of Claude Van Damme's premieres of one of his new movies. So I went down and a few pictures and we had a good chat about
travel. Oh, really?
Yeah, so I met his brother in the film, Dennis Alexio, Claude Van Damme, and also met Tong Po as well.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Wow.
So in 1991, we've done a big extravaganza Birmingham, which was put on, and all the stars, Don Wilson, Cynthia Rothrock, Michael Kesey, which is named Tong Po, that was all there. So I was in that. Obviously, as a youngster, I was quite shy, and I'm not like I am now, but I wish I was.
Yeah.
So kind of met all them. We're all in the same kind of arena, but we're all stars in our own thing. So, you know, I was 1-9 in Birmingham. As well as that, Europe, England.
So what was it like for you at that time, being quite a showman in person, being thrust into the spotlight, being the world champion, premiers? How did you deal with that? What was your advice?
That's what we were going to aim to do. We want to be famous and get the money and do this. And so that's what happened. Even now when I'm out, you know, people are coming up to me and want pictures and want this. And sometimes I'm out having a meal. My missus, bloody, I'm not another one. That's just part and parcel of the game, and we just got to be polite. And obviously, sometimes when I've had too many drinks, I keep harassing. Look, can you just deal with yourself?
Yes, I'll
so just, I can see what it's like for the David Beckhams and the Jack Grealishes.
Yeah.
It's bloody hard, because when you're so famous, you're in the media spotlight, you can get a bit fed up with it by because it's too much, but you've got to have that person to deal with it as well.
So if you could go back and you was as confident as you was now, would you have conversations with Van Damme and the lads and stuff and talk about working together and doing something?
Definitely, yeah. When I look back at it, you know, like, the way I am now.
There's an opportunity there.
I'm also, like, you know, coach of fighters, and I've managed them and had to negotiate deals. And the experience has happened throughout what I've done. And you can't buy experience. You just got to keep going through the field. And yeah, if I went back now, I would be a multimillionaire doing it and making more cash. But you know what? One thing I've got is good health. And you can never buy that, because I've got friends who are multimillionaires, and they'd give all the money away for their health. So when I look at that, I think, you know what? I've invested well into what I've done, because I'm still continually training. It's an addiction I've got, and I can't stop. I just try to train. I've got to do my runs. I've got to do my training. I hit my bags. Without that, I think I'll have mental health problems. Mm. Now we talk about mental health and all that. My way out was to do training.
That was your vision.
Yeah, and it still is now. You know,
do you come across youngsters and people that you think, okay, let's get them down that path and work them harder and concentrate on this? Do you see them firsthand that they're off the beaten track and stuff like that? Is it something that you were conscious about?
Yeah, you can get a kid walks in as a bit of a bully. You can get the kid who comes in, he's being bullied. So it works with both areas. You can change that kid as a bully, and you can change the kid who's really low. So it can work both ways. And in that environment, it's the skill we got to work with the youngsters.
Yeah.
As well as that, we can work with the older ones. You know, I've had a guy who's like in his 80s and continued, went to the doctors, and he's getting blood pressure down. It's never too late. So no matter what age you are, never give up. And just give it a go. Mm-hmm. But obviously the level you'd go at, don't go too fast.
Mm-hmm. So you never really had any serious injuries other than the one, which was when you got your jaw broke.
I had the jaw broken in two places. And you know, when I was fighting, I dropped my hand. That's when Masatadi was there. It was clapping down. And I went home and I didn't know it was broken. I said to my brother, look at this. Let's go and get it checked. And it's only when I went to the hospital. I said, I won the fight though. He said, no, let's have it checked. And woke up, wired up, 6 weeks. Couldn't open up on my mouth, and I had a diet of mashed potato and soup. So it didn't stop me talking though. So I was still going out teaching. And the other injury I had, a broken ankle. I came off the curb. I got into a street fight back in the 90s, and I was fighting some guy, and someone jumped on my back. And I was fighting for the world title 6 weeks after that. So that was maybe saying you were not ready. And I went into a cast for 12 weeks. And then I had to recover from that and come back from it, which ain't easy when I look back at it. I've got a strong mind. It's my martial arts that gave me that strong mind.
So you broke your ankle in the street for 6 weeks before you went to fight for a world title?
Yeah, but I didn't fight and I had to pull out. Yeah, so if I hadn't healed up, so I had to wait another like 6 or 7, 8 months before I could come back to fight again. Yeah. And the jaw broke was in 1989. I was fighting Winston Walker. Then I thought, let's have he wanted a rematch. I said, I'm ready for a rematch. So 6 months later, when I recovered, went up to Elkhurston, and Winston didn't turn up. He took a beating the first time. So he didn't turn up. So I said, I've come to fight, and I'm really in good shape. So there's another guy in the corner, a guy called Antonio Zabaroni, the heavyweight. He was like 18 and a half, 19 star, big guy. Said his fight train turned up. I said, I'll fight him. This is the 80s, it's no health and safety. So my coach said, I was world amateur champion. He was at about 15. But I said, he said, do you want to fight? I said, yeah, let's get him in. So we got in the ring. Elkhurston, we were all like racist town and all the names. Yeah, it was. I got in the ring. We were swimming in the middle of the ring. We looked at each other. And I got in there. I gave him a good kick. I shook him with the right hand. And his legs went. And then the next kick I went, he grabbed my leg and he threw me over the top rope. And I hobbled it onto the ropes. Luckily, the little glasses and the tables and luckily I went down. I held on. The ref quickly grabbed me and got back in. You know what happened after that? It's on YouTube. It's got cash crash backwards somersault. Stopped in the first round. Yeah. That was another experience. So, I mean, I'd never do that with any of my fighters because I'd get in trouble from the parents. What are you doing? But my trainer obviously had every confidence in me. And it was different times.
Mm.
You know, loads of things have changed. You know, the way we coach students, the way we do things. You can't go around kicking in the stomach anymore, give them a good dig because everything's changed. I don't think the kids now, not being bad, not as tough as we were back in our time. I heard Tom saying about, you know, there's no electric, there's no this, there's no hot water, there's something inside. You're so right. I think that upbringing is so different because we've kind of, the next generation, we're the first, second generation, our first parents are first generation, and we've come along and we've experienced school, education, and then we've got our next kids and we kind of wrap them in cotton wool and give them everything they want and spoil them.
And then you would do all they are the way they are.
Yeah, yeah.
So do you find, so is it one of those kind of situations where you wouldn't change anything about your upbringing, but there's no way you put the kids through the things that you had to go through to become who you are?
Well, I got my own kids and I kept them away from the ring, but I wanted them to learn the techniques and the reflexes and the fitness. I wanted to get that part. So more my kids have trained. They're all quite fit. My daughter done the London Marathon last year. My son just done the Stratford Half Marathon. He done it in 1 hour, 24 minutes, which is really quick. He was like, he came out in 29th out of over 2,000 runners. So he takes it quite, and the other one plays football on Saturdays and Sundays. So they're all quite active. Mm. My younger son was at, here we are, Birmingham City. We came out on the pitch and they were playing Everton of all the teams that were in the big news yesterday when they Everton. So I remember coming down and I felt like a proud, even though it's Birmingham City, it doesn't matter who you play for. It's a
So just for context there, you are more of an Aston Villa fan.
That's right, yeah. I was brought up, obviously my poor brothers were all Albion fans.
That's that side of town as well. Handsworth.
That's right, yeah. They were all,
your brothers were Albion fans?
They were all Albion fans because we were close to the Hawthorns, right in the middle there. And then I said, oh, you know what, I'm going to support the Villa side. I got the scarf and the hat and all that kind of stuff.
So you had to learn to fight, really, didn't you? Just to be nice.
That's right, yeah, yeah. So then when we done promotions and stuff, you know, then we sent Aston Villa a letter saying, like, you know, Cash Gill or Cash to Flash. Obviously, they must have heard of me. We've done a couple of demonstrations at half time. And one was all Birmingham crowd, Aston Villa versus Birmingham City, the Coca-Cola Cup semi-final. We were promoting one of my fights. What a crowd to get in front of. All that. That's a good promotion. That was, that's what it was called, Flash Promotions. And we still got the pictures and the history of that particular occasion. We also done another one with Aston Villa in Newcastle. But with me, I'm a neutral. I'd like all the Midlands team to do well, even Walsall.
Yeah.
You know, in the playoffs. And one Walsall, Birmingham City, Aston Villa, Coventry. It's an unfortunate couple for you. I'm a big sports footballer as well. I watch a lot of football.
Yeah.
Obviously, my kids doing football all the time. Villa fan myself. My kids were supporting Chelsea. They said, Dad, can you get us a blue top? So I went out to town. I said, I can't really get them a blue top. I get them a Chelsea top. So ever since that day.
Oh, really? Is that how it started?
That's it. So now they're Chelsea fans. So I have to go down Stamford Bridge with them, take them up there. And
it's not a bad place to go, is it?
No, yeah, it's all right. I think they're done.
I was going to say, if you're going to flip to another blue team, the last 20 years hasn't been a bad time to be Chelsea fans.
I think they've been at the right time. I think they were when Mourinho was there.
Yeah.
And my connections at Villa, when Chelsea were playing Villa, my son got to meet all the Chelsea players. You know, I got to meet Frank Lampard, John Terry.
Awesome.
Drogba, he met them all and he had pictures and all that. So when he went back to school, obviously he appreciates it more now because he's older.
Yes.
He's got all the pictures. He's going, oh, Dad, I was so lucky to go there. I said, you've been very, very lucky.
Something that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Some your kids, yeah, so like you said, now they're older. There's an appreciation. Is it the same lot with you and your career and who you were? Did they kind of just, was it just like, Dad's off fighting again at the time?
It's now. All the years later, they see UFC, how it's grown. Dad said, Dad, can we see that fight with Cole? Can we see that fight with Hintersia was another great fight. I had, I lost one of my world titles in Auburn, Australia. And I was going to get it back. So I was having an elimination, a world title eliminator against a guy called Ronnie Hintersia. Ronnie Hintersia was supposed to be a workout, we'll move around the ring. And we had the big Wayne in central Birmingham with our tuxedos on, with our limousines. There's another Flash Promotions event. Went down and my mate picked him up. I said, Vince, can you pick up Ronnie from Stansted? And when he went to pick him up, he said, Cash, I think you're in for a tough fight. You know? I said, why don't you say that? He goes, so I offered him a drink and he wanted a Budweiser. I said, Budweiser? So this guy's coming to fight me, and having a Budweiser? And then when we went to the Wayne, we had like the suits on, the nice tuxedos. We wanted it to be flashed like Cash, so he put it in, and his coach went up to him and he said he's never had a suit on before. I said, this is like the street kid, he never wore a suit before. So when we got in the ring, I was first round of
different red flags coming up, like, you know.
But anyway, I didn't think of that because I always think what I'm gonna do and what I'm gonna that's the mindset you gotta have. Anyway, I give him a good beating for 6-7, and then Tom Ross, he's commentating on the fight. He goes, oh, Cash does get a bit careless sometimes, and what happens then? he does a spinning backfist straight in the face. A spinning backfist, a really powerful punch, and he brought up my nose, and I went down to the corner.
Can I win a hamasaya?
I went down on one knee, and I'm blood pouring out my nose. I said, bloody, I've never brought my nose before. And got back to the corner, sat down, and I looked in the crowd. I said, my dad, I thought, bloody hell, if I don't carry on fighting, he'll give me a beating when I get home. So, anyway, round eight, I hung on for dear life because he kept getting spinning kicks, and he had his chance of winning, but you know what? He never got it because he ran on and knocked him out. And that was described by Thomas as one of the greatest comebacks in the history of kickboxing. So with that one, it's well worth watching on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
It's Cash Flash versus Ronnie Hinton.
We'll drop that on. We'll put that on.
The greatest comeback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Class. So you touched upon Lob Rice earlier, like the Ilkeston thing. What did you find about, it was different in the 80s and 90s and stuff. Did you find that was big stumbling block for you, or was it because you're from Birmingham, it's quite multicultural anyway, that you didn't just took it like a water off duck's back kind of thing?
Well, when we grew up in, you know, we've seen the BNP, the National Front Marches, back in the 70s, early 80s, we grew up with that, and we grew up with the two sets of riots in Handsworth. So for us, it didn't really bother us, you know, we went anywhere in the world, like, oh, this place is really violent, oh, it's rough thing. Rough, this ain't rough. You want to be in Handsworth back in them times? So for me, it didn't really bother me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're in the ring fighting, there's fighters I know who have to go out, be carried out and hidden because the crowd, because all kicks off, they have to be taken out through back windows and everything. So you had a lot of difference. But luckily for me, I didn't really have to experience anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
no, that's good.
So we had some tough times.
Because you find Birmingham, it's obviously Birmingham doing Bryce, yeah. As it does, it's a very unique place. And I know every city in the country will say, oh, we're this, we do that. But Birmingham is itself such a multicultural pot, isn't it, where everyone is celebrated for who they are by the city and held up by the city.
Definitely, I love Birmingham. And that's what it is, all about community. And we'll get on with each other. And when you go to other places, you can see why Birmingham is the place to be. It's got that good mix.
Mm. So in the documentary, a tribute talking about Birmingham legends, your tributes and your friendship with Apache Indian.
Yeah, Apache Indian. Apache Indian done really well because he was working at the Wilder in a factory and obviously always into his music. He was always at Handsworth Park doing, you know, the carnival. Handsworth Carnival was massive back in the day. And he'd be with all the black guys, you know, doing all the music and the lyrics. And obviously he was looked after by a black guy, you know, as a nanny. He looked after and he was picking all the patois up. So he suddenly started doing his singing as a little hobby and he used to go on the decks and do his little thing in Handsworth Park. Suddenly hit it big time and that one record that he made,
Boom Shakalak,
that was his famous one. Wine your body, wriggle your belly. That's why I'm not a singer. But Apache's,
that was in Hollywood films, wasn't it? Could not move.
I think
by hearing that song.
Seven or eight. I think when COVID came, that carried Apache in here and all the money off the royalties.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because his own song. So Apache obviously done really well. And we both became international. Both kids from Hansa went to the same school. I think there's about 6 months in between us. So we both become international and gone our different ways. And then I was in the chip shop the one day in about 1990-91. I said, Apache, about time you've done a song for me. And he said, what do you want? I said, and it's within 3 days, it dropped a disc off of my eyes. And it was one of his top hits. He'd done like a dub plate and changed all the lyrics exactly for me. Like number one in the boxing ring, rather than number one in the Bombay charts. And then Cash Price going to try something. And then you can hear that. It's a great song. And that obviously was ring entrance anywhere I went in Europe and all around the world. I'd put that song on. Obviously, when we had the home show here, I used to have a Bangra band. You know, bang, people said, what's bang rap? You know, it was early years, 91. The crowd, all the big dual drums. Now you see everywhere, you know, the big, they make so much noise. They were in their big costumes, all the colourful. Obviously, because my parents came from India. So that's my background. So I thought, you know what, let's put a bit of glitz and glamour. Obviously, draped in the Union Jack because we're representing England. We're all born here. So we're English. So anywhere we went, we represent England. So it's great, great honour. You know, proud Brummie.
A lot of the showmanship of it, because you said you was quite, you grew up and you were quite timid and stuff like that. But then the acts and the whole glitz and glam of it then, that must have been a nice angle to be going in and people are looking, your proponents especially are looking and thinking, what is this? Like, why was you 6'4" or whatever it was? So it's just thinking, geez, like, they've instantly got the edge over him before you even got in the ring, haven't you?
Yeah, 6'3". But you know that Bangalore band, you've won the first few around the ring. Tom Russ, oh, Cash has won the first few. But you know, but going around the world, you know, looking like I am, I was quite very thin. But we said, look, is that Cash the Prussian over there? Because I was like 10 stone 12, 11 stone 2, 11 stone 6, but very thin.
Yeah.
They look at you, look at the hell. We're lucky making a round. I remember the Mexicans, I said, oh, I want them to need the stool. And we went the full 12 rounds. So I always said, never judge a book by its cover. Because when I hit you with that, good night.
Can you imagine? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk transferable skills. So Cash the Flash, the businessman.
Yeah.
You want to talk us through what you do commercially, what your business is?
Yeah, I do. I run Cash the Flash Gym. Before, I ran it for like 14 years. I've been teaching that over 40 years now. You know, I was teaching at schools. First one was in Sutton Coldfield. No, it was Harborne, Sutton Coldfield, Howes Owen, Birmingham City Centre. And then you always dream of having your own place, which really, when I look back, I think bloody that was a one big headache. But that was a dream that I wanted to do. And I held it for 13 or 14 years. It was state-of-the-art gym. You know, I've been around all these gyms, Pitt and Saunders gyms. It's had lovely mats and had a ring in the corner, had a sauna upstairs, had its own changing rooms. Just what I wanted, because it's beautiful. And anyone cares about the first impression they had of it. But it was, from the outside, you couldn't appreciate it because it's just like a unit. But when you walked in, absolutely brilliant gym. And that was my dream. I had a few dreams, and the other one was writing a book. I also done a biography called My Life in a Flash. You know, it's got loads of stories. It's got contributed like UB40, got a few footballers. I've got a couple of footballers from Birmingham City, actually. David Dunn's in it, Kenny Cunningham. Because when there was playing for Birmingham City, I became friends with them. We used to train at the same gym and got to know them, Matthew Ups and all of them. They had to come down to the shows and support it. Obviously, they knew all the Villa fans. They said, them auctions, we've handed the boots in. I'm bloody not very good if they're all Villa fans here. But, you know.
David Dunn famously done the pirouette, didn't he? Trying to do the back heel again.
That's right.
Ended up on his back,
so
at least.
That's right, yeah. So, anyway, I got friendly with them. And we still keep it. I still had a message from Matthew Upson the other day. So, we still keep the link. So you never know when you need anyone. So you meet a lot of people. That's the good thing about it. And running the gym was great because, you know, I got to travel the world. I got out to Australia 4 times. I got out to Hawaii, South Africa, Kyrgyzstan, Germany, France, Holland, Belgium, Italy. You know, there's people out there who are world champions. I've never been out of Birmingham. I was thinking to myself, where have you been? They've not been anywhere. So the era we had was a great era. And I always wanted to travel. You know, I was lucky to go around. Like I said before, I'd never been on an aeroplane. When I was 18, now I've been like everywhere. People go, what kind of life? You know what? I'll do it all over again. Even, it wasn't about money or anything. It's just seeing different people, seeing poverty, seeing how low these places are. We'd realize how lucky we are here in England.
Yeah.
You know, I even got to India in 2017. There was a Amir Khan and a Bill DeSange put on the MMA show, international team event. And I went down as a coach for the striking. So I was teaching the Punjab team. So, and you know the one that come teaching the Punjab team? Of yep. Coaching them was a striking, the Americans they did the ground stuff, had German, it was such a great show. And I was doing commentary as well on the ESPN TV, massive. I've done the coaching and the commentary. And then the year after, I got offered to go again. So I went for 6 weeks, never been to India before. My first experience, 2017, you know, I've been everywhere else, never to India. So it was great hearing all these stories from my dad. When you get to India, I went to the Taj Mahal, I went to Ludhiana, I went to the a golden temple, and then they had all the cameras out there waiting for me. I was sitting in a room like this, and all the cameras, and I was telling them all the stories, you know, honored. And I was given an honor by the head of the religion, the golden temple. So, and when I came back to England, oh, how was India? I said, hey, do you know, just seeing me on the TV, it's how powerful media is. There's people here, and I thought, bloody hell. And then the year after, I got to go again for another 4 weeks. We never won this time. I went to Mumbai, so then. For another 4 weeks coaching out there with the team again. So that's another one. And then I went to Kyrgyzstan as well. We've been coaching out there, which is Northern Europe. I said, you're going to go to Northern? I said, listen, but the problem is, same as anywhere else, there's politics.
Yeah.
I was going there to train 100 people. When I got there, it must have been about 40 people because the politics plays a game. That's the problem with politics and religion. Mm. You don't get anywhere.
Yeah. So can you pull on these experiences now? So when you do your public speaking and stuff like that, can you pull on these experiences to let people know and help them and kind of advise them and stuff like that, these experiences, the opportunities that you've been given?
Yeah, so while I talk about my own experiences, my own stories, how I was low, so I do a lot of motivational stuff to lift kids and say, you know what, you keep believing. You know, I go to schools, I go to colleges, universities, done a lot of talks. I'm also now looking to do after dinner. You know, I've done a recent event, Asian Business Awards thing. I went down and done a speech. But, you know, it was typical. They didn't pay me for it, but I went down there. But I'm looking now to do a bit of paid work and to tell them some inspirational story. So I've got a lot of humour as well in them stories, because there's a lot of funny things that happen along the way. You know, but there's a lot of lows as well. So we need to, the load, like I told you earlier, I got knocked out in Austria. You know, I became world champion, defending my world title. You know, I came on Sky Sports, Transworld International, a fight that went to 68 because the micro recall that had over 250 million viewers around the world. That's a lot of views. Mm. And that fight was going back to 1993. So obviously we are ahead of the game, ahead of the field. So
it's a roller coaster, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
So just finally then, I think what would your advice be to 14-year-old Cash Mervyn? Or what is your advice to kids now and anyone that you would just speak to?
Anyone who wants to do something in life. I talk to my uncle and say, listen, whatever you want to do, you work for it, put the hours in, and it will come to you and you can do it. I said, never give up and just keep, you can have obstacles in the way, but a lot of the way, our parents paved the way for us, we paved the way for them, and then you just make the way forward and just keep working at it. If you don't believe, you're never going to make it. Just keep at it. Mm-hmm. I had a lot of experiences and a lot of bad experiences, but they made me better.
And like we say, Birmingham now, it's a different time, isn't it? It's vibrant. There's so many opportunities for young people to make a name for themselves, especially in Birmingham.
If you're not going to make a name, you're never going to make it. Now's your best time to make it. You've got cameras, you've got crews out there, you've got TV, you get your biggest chance now.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
Go for it.
Legend. Hashtag Flash. Cash the Flash. Thank you so much for your time today.
Well, yeah, good night. Thank you.
Legend.
Nice one, lads.